Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. George and Andy, before I say hello to you both and before I say how are you, because I think I know the answer, apologies, we've not been around as much recently as we perhaps should have been, but you know, sometimes life gets in the way of things, so apologies for that. And this may be one of the rawest Talking the Blues that we've ever done, because we're actually doing it a very short time after what frankly was an incredibly disappointing and I'm not sure what the word is actually.
Abysmal.
abysmal. But just, I don't know. Anyway, George and Andy, while I think of some words, hello to you both. Not asking you how you are. Let's get into it.
Go,
well,
bro.
I think we've just witnessed the culmination of a slump. I'm a little bit lost for words to describe that performance today. Last home game of the season. The weather was very, very pleasant, to say the least. The sun was shining. Shirt sleeve crowd. Good atmosphere. And quite frankly, it was shocking. I mean, there were a couple of individuals played really well. Merlin Roll played really, really well. I thought Garner was as competitive as ever. Just wish he could cut out the yellow cards, because he's had 11 too many. We'll give him one, but he's had 11 too many. Irobinum was okay. Grossly disappointed with Littleman and Dye today. And it has to be said, not just today, the last couple of weeks, he's been largely non-existent, in my opinion, in games. I mean, we twice led at Palace and couldn't hold on. And today, well, it's just appalling, really. We've played Sunderland three times this year and twice they've beaten us on our own ground. And, you know, all due respect to Sunderland, you know, and credit to them. You know, they've come up from the Championship and they've adjusted to the Premier League as well as any promoted side has, probably in the last 5 years or more. So you've got to give Sunderland a great deal of credit. You know, they kept their focus on the game. They enjoyed by far the lion's share of the possession. And quite honestly, they embarrassed us on our own pitch. And it's not the first time this year that we've been embarrassed on our own pitch. So all in all, you know, the first year at a brand new stadium has been underwhelming, I have to say. And it's bizarre that the best performance of the season at Hill Dickinson came against Chelsea, who we played tremendously well against and quite rightly sent them back down the M6 and the M1 with the tails between the legs. And since then, we haven't performed. We've played, but we haven't performed. And I don't understand how we can beat Chelsea as convincingly as we did and then, by and large, crap the bed in the remaining games since. It's just, I just don't understand what's happened to motivation levels and inspirational levels within the club, because it strikes me there's precious little inspiration and motivation to get these players truly, truly wound up to put in a performance.
Can I jump in, Andy?
Yeah, by all means, Paul.
Because I think I found my words. We're just not competitive enough. We don't have good enough players. We, frankly, and you know, I said this is one of David Moyes' greatest advocates. We don't have a competitive manager in terms of tactics, in terms of approach to the modern game, in terms to how to outthink, how to outplay, how to manage how to manage a game, modern opposition. I love David Moyes. Did a fantastic job the first time round. Did a fantastic job when he came back and, you know, stabilised the club when the club desperately needed stabilising. I thought we'd finish eighth, and I said it consistently. We're going to fall short of that. Eighth was always ambitious because of where we came from as a club and where we started the season, or where we started when we came into the season. But frankly, everything that's happened over the recent years, the chickens never came to roost in previous seasons. We always managed to slightly outperform actually what we were as a football club, and that meant that we managed to stay in the division, just slightly outperform what any reasonable expectation may be of us. And as a result of that, we let, you know, I certainly can't speak for other people, I'd have this to believe that we were greater than some of the parts than we were. This season, our expectations should have been higher. New ownership, first season at Bramley Moor, investment in the squad. But frankly, we've not met those expectations.
Nope.
And what it's meant is actually, it's for me at least, and again, I can only speak for myself. And this has been coming for a while. I've held back from this and tried to sort of shore up what frankly has become an indefensible position. We're just not good enough. We don't have a good enough squad. Don't have good enough players across the pitch. We have one or two really high quality players, but no more than that. We have a small number of players who are average Premier League footballers, and then we have a load of players who frankly wouldn't appear as consistently as they have for a number of years in any other Premier League football club that wasn't wallowing in relegation or near relegation, or didn't have owners that could actually fund far more than they have. The realism of the situation is that we were lucky to survive. We were lucky to remain in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
We had the opportunity this year to step forward from that, and the maximum expectation would be European football. Minimum expectation would be not to be in a relegation scrap like we have done, like we have been in previous years. We met the minimum expectation. I hope that we'd meet the maximum expectation, which is European football. But the reality is, and you know, I'm being totally frank here, and if I burn a few bridges, I burn a few bridges. We're not good enough to be anything other than where we are currently.
Absolutely. That's what football league tables are all about. You can't argue.
And
with.
We as fans have to recognise that, and you know, all the frustrations, and I'm as frustrated as anybody else. And I've tried to detract myself as much from the game as I possibly can, as much, you know, detract myself from Everton as much as I can, have focused on other aspects of the game that, you know, I might or might not have some expertise in myself. But the fact is as a football club, at the very best, we are better than the clubs that might get relegated.
We're average.
We're not better than... Well, let me finish. I'm feeling slightly aggressive here.
Good.
We're better than any club that might get... we might anticipate to be relegation fodder. And that typically now, because of the gap between the Premier League and the gap between the Championship, is those that come up. we're not better than any of the clubs that are competing at the bottom half of the might qualify for Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And had we qualified for Europe this year, then we would have, you know, outperformed expectations and outperformed actually who and what we are. And I hope that this might be a wake-up call. A wake-up call
to who?
The wake-up call to the management of the club, and a wake-up call to the owners of the club who have been distant. And that might be their style, but that's actually not is what is required at Everton Football Club. Like it or not, and you could never accuse Bill Kenwright of not being this. In fact, previous owners, we need the connection with our owners. We're the type of club that we need all of the parts to be functioning together in order to achieve. And I've said in the past, we achieve things when all of those functioning parts function together. And the owners are distant. They rescued the club and they put the club in a strong financial position going forwards, which is great, and thank you very much for doing that. But they did it for reasons beyond just wanting to be altruistic towards Everton. They did it because they could buy an asset that was massively underpriced, massively underperforming, and it was an opportunity to stabilize that asset and then perhaps make that asset a better performing asset than it was previously. And as a result, the capital value of their investment would raise over time, or rise over time, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But they've done nothing more than that. And, you know, we have a much stronger board. We have a board full of people who know how to run businesses, are successful in their own right. And we have a number of investors outside of the Freakins who are equally successful investors, know how to run businesses successfully, and have done so in all sorts of different sectors. Haven't done it in football, but that's not an excuse not to do it in football. And they have to wake up and smell the coffee. They have to wake up and realize that this football is not just a game in which you pour money into and the results flow from it, because frankly, almost every owner of every Premier League football club, and I've done the analysis and have, you know, written about the analysis for weeks, months, years, are capable of doing that. It needs far more than that. It needs intelligence. It needs the ability to be able to outperform our competitors. And on every single measure, we're not doing that. And that's why we are where we are today, and that's why we're all as disappointed as we are today at the end of a season that promised more than it delivered. But the reason why it didn't deliver is not because of the individuals, not because people weren't working as hard as they possibly could, because I actually believe they did. And frankly, the quality isn't there, and the quality needs changing, and the quality needs investment, and it needs application by every single individual, from the owners down to whatever level you want to think of within the club, to apply.
100%. Couldn't agree more. Is it going to happen?
Come on.
Is it going to happen?
I don't know, George.
$64,000 question, that one.
I don't know, George. Look, on a purely pragmatic level, the owners could say, we've rescued the club. Stadium's part paid for, part, you know, fully financed, and it's financed in a manner which means that, you know, we won't have a problem going forwards. The value of the club will increase as long as we stay in the Premier League, which, you know, realistically now we will do so. And if we qualify for Europe, the value of the club will go up. So from their perspective, it's, you know, a good investment, and they've done as much as they need to in terms of securing that, if that's what their ambitions are. But beyond that, if we want to move to the next level, if we want to compete with the clubs who are really, really hungry for success, then we have to be equally hungry. And what I don't see at Everton is that hunger.
No, absolutely not.
Couldn't agree more.
What I'm asking you is, because you know a great deal more, you talk to more people than me and Andy do, or probably almost every other person listening to this podcast, is it going to happen, in your opinion, is what I'm asking you?
I don't see the hunger, so I don't think it is.
Then where do we go from here?
We either need to convince the owners, well, we need to convince the owners that they need to bring in people who have got that hunger. And I don't doubt for a moment that David Moyes has got that hunger, but before a car came along, the horse and cart was the best form of transport.
Well,
for me, there's no winning culture within the club, and that starts at the top. If the owners have, you know, made things stable financially, and as you said, the stadium's financed, etc., etc. So we've, to all intents and purposes, there's no money issues now with Everton Football Club. So what's missing is the desire and the willingness to take us to that next level. And if they don't show it from the very, very top that they're prepared to invest further to take us, and I'm not talking about straight into, I mean, yes, we'd like it to be straight into Champions League, but to get us into Europe, you know, whatever criteria is available next season, because it sure as hell isn't going to happen this season, not now. if they're not prepared to demonstrate that level of commitment and willingness to make this club a winner and not just be competitive, actually seriously go into every game and every competition wanting to win it, then we're just going to remain as we are, which is an average entity.
I think the desire is there, Andy. I just don't think there's the understanding of what is required to meet that desire or to make that desire a reality. Because frankly, I see teams that, you know, we shouldn't really be that concerned about playing week in, week out, who are out competing us.
Yeah, because they're better run, and they've obviously got a better vision of where they want their club. They've got a
better understanding of what's needed.
They've got a better vision and understanding of where they want their club to be.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, as we're not going to disrespect Brighton and Brentford and Bournemouth and Sunderland, who've all gone above us this season now, you know, but quite clearly, you know, the owners and boards of directors and very probably, you know, the team managers are on a much more unified page than the people within Everton Football Club.
Both yes and no. I don't doubt for a second that most of the people at Everton are unified in their desire to make the club better and to achieve better things and to be qualified for Europe. The problem is I don't think they understand what's required.
Well, yeah, with respect, anybody can turn around and say, I've got the desire to take Everton Football Club from mid-table mediocrity to, you know, the very top of the tree.
Yeah.
But if they've not got the wherewithal to do it, then it's just platitudes and it's just meaningless nonsense. Every single Evertonian wants us to be number one. Every fan of every club wants them to be number one, but it's how they're going about doing it. And to me, I'm not seeing, you know, I'm just not seeing that there is a hell, you know, at all costs, this club has got to finish top six next season. I'm not getting any sense of any
Can I
kind
please
of feeling along those lines whatsoever.
Can I please ask a question?
Yeah, George, please.
Will David Moyes be manager next season according to his contract?
I think so.
Then you're in deep trouble. Or we're in deep trouble. Because he's comprehensively and with the best will in the world and all that stuff, and this is, you know, not to be negative about the man, not capable of doing what you're talking about. So the other question I had is, who are the other football clubs, soccer clubs, in TFG's portfolio?
Roma in Italy. And we got another one, Paul.
Yeah, there's a French team.
They're the second division, aren't they?
Yeah.
And when was the last time Roma won anything?
Without Google being our friend, I'm not sure off the top of my head.
I think they're going to qualify for Europe this season.
Right. I just wonder how ambitious those people are, because we've heard nothing.
With the greatest respect to Roma and the greatest respect to the Italian league, it's a different ball game. That's the point I'm making. I think the, you know, for all of the criticisms that you can apply to the Premier League, it is the most competitive and the most demanding league in the world because of the amount of resource that's applied to it. And that therefore requires, in order to be competitive within that league, it requires the greatest application, the greatest tactical knowledge, the sort of almost like the bleeding edge technology in order to compete. And we're not there.
No.
So, and we're not, you know, let's get real now. I mean, the owners have said nothing. If they are happy that David Moyes continues to coach that squad of people, whoever they may bring in over the summer, or he may try to bring in, we're not likely to achieve what you're talking about, which is a step up, a big step up in quality, ambition, drive, optimism, belief. We lacked all of that.
Absolutely, 100%. And that is the fundamental question. What do the Friedkins, what are their ambitions going forwards?
How are we supposed to find out when they won't talk?
Well, I think we have to ask the question. And
yeah, well, we've asked the question. What worries me about it is, I've said this before, is because you go into an organization and the organization, you know, like an actor or a football player, you're a hired hand for a time, and you go into an organization and you get a smell immediately of what it is. Everton is what we are. We've done well and we're now average. We were struggling, but we're not. None of the players on that pitch today, this is what broke my heart watching it, believe for one split second that they were going to get anything like 4-6 points from the last two games and maybe have a chance at Europe. They know they're not good enough. And that goes all the way through everything. You know, you have to ask the serious question, what the hell happened after Chelsea?
Mm-hmm.
And why did it happen? And who is responsible for that? And who is responsible for going, you're not going to be responsible for that anymore because you fucked it up, pal? Whoever it was, and I'm not pointing a finger at anybody because, you know, it's a complex business. But I don't hear anybody asking that question. And apart from the fans who are powerless, I don't hear anybody bleeding about it either. And it certainly didn't look to me like the players gave a monkey's fart this afternoon, frankly. I couldn't see any drive in there. I didn't see anybody busting a gut to do anything. And Sunderland playing at 60% of their pace brushed us aside in the end and then go above us. And they're, you know, in with a chance of it all now. Did we look like we were in with a chance of it? No.
No.
Not for a second. You know, first 30 minutes, we had 26% possession. with the strike force we've got, you can't win anything. I mean, it's just, it's bonkers. And so, you know, if we can't talk to the Freakins, then, you know, we are kind of reduced to going, you must replace the manager. But I will defend the manager to the point of saying, any other manager who might come to Everton knows that Everton is not an ambitious, driving, where we should be at the top table club. So what kind of person is going to come?
Yeah. And I think beyond that, George, I think you make a great point, that the final point is that more fundamentally, the players that we can attract know that equally.
Yeah, of course they do.
Because ultimately, it's down to the players on the pitch to deliver. You can have the best manager in the world, and if the players aren't good enough, they're not going to deliver. And at the moment, we can't attract those players who desperately want to play Champions League football, win trophies, and be at the very, very pinnacle of the game. And that's what you need.
Yeah. Either that, or you put faith in, this is a mean thing to say, but, you know, we're all feeling it, a younger coach with newer ideas, more grasp on all the, you know, data, AI, bollocks, or whatever it is that, you know, makes up a football team these days, but somebody with some personal ambition.
Well, we look at three of the four sides immediately above us.
I have done
Brentford, Bournemouth, and Brighton.
Yeah.
They've all got, you know, compared to Moisey, young, much younger, much more or much less experienced managers, and all playing a better brand of football.
Well, that's.
And I mean, all right, we know that Bournemouth are going to lose their manager, you know, but they're still playing for him.
Yeah, but also, he arrived with a philosophy of how play football. None of us, nobody, I defy any Evertonian to be satisfied with the way that we are playing football home and away. Away is absolutely tip top, but we played like an away team today and were shit at it. It has to change. If it doesn't change, we're just in for another season of what we've just been through. We hope.
There's also a much more fundamental point from my perspective, is that the nature of the game is changing completely. If you're not one of the very top clubs, one of the top four, five, six clubs who are generating much more revenue than anybody else is, and I'm sorry to bring it back to a business.
Yeah, I know. It makes a difference who you can afford, doesn't it?
If you're not one of the top four, five, six clubs who generate far more revenue than we will do, even with Bramley Moore, and we will do for many, many years ahead, then the only thing that you've got to rely on, and the new regulations aim you in this direction, is the ability to buy players young, develop those players, and then sell those players and generate what's known as trading profits. And, you know, Brentford and Brighton have been classic examples of that over the years. Bournemouth as well, to an extent.
Yeah.
There's no evidence of our ability to do that. There's no evidence of our ability to go out and recruit young players, either through the academy or those players that have just gone beyond the academy stage and just breaking into, like, you know, the first team, and then to be able to sell them for significant profits in the future. Because if your club is not big enough to generate the revenues that Manchester City, Liverpool, Arsenal, Manchester United, etc., Chelsea generate, that's the only way that you're going to be able to compete going forwards. And we're not there.
Nowhere near it.
No.
And then this, then you have to point back at not the manager, not the individual players, not even the people who run the academy. You have to run back. You have to look back at the owners of the football club and say, what's your view of this? And what are you doing to make our academy as attractive as Manchester City's academy, as Bournemouth's academy, as Brighton's academy, as Brentford's academy? What's your recruitment policy? How are we competitive compared to all of those clubs? How are we competitive in terms of providing a pathway whereby players that we bring into our club develop and have future careers that we can benefit from and that they benefit from because of their career advancements? I see none of that at Everton Football Club. And that, I think, are the questions that we need to ask and we need answers for going forwards. Otherwise, we're just going to have future years of continual disappointment, whereby the only realistic result, or the only realistic expectation of us getting to where we want to be, is the fact that we outperform.
Yeah.
And you know, for us to have got into European football this season required outperformance.
Yep.
And we've actually failed to do that. We failed.
Well, you know, we have failed. We have failed to do it, Paul. But there's also, I mean, I've said this before. We've had more than one opportunity this season to break into, if you like, the top six or the top seven. And each time we've had the opportunity, and we might not have stayed there, but having got there, you would think that that would be the meat injection that everybody would want to stay there. But each opportunity we've had to make that, if you like, really important move and statement, we've blown it. We haven't done it. We've coughed up soft goals. We've failed to get results, or we've had mediocre half of football, which has cost us. You know, we might have done well in one 45 minutes, but we've been diabolical in the other. And it's that whole mentality thing for me. You know, do we want it? And I mean, the fans want it. I think the players individually would want it, whether they believe it or not, I don't know. But you would think personal pride would drive them on. But I don't see it within the rest of the club. Everyone just seems to accept it. We didn't make it. Oh, well, there's always next year. Well, I think that there's always next year. The sands of that time are running out. And you've just highlighted, Paul, the way the game is changing. If you can't develop your own players or recruit them well enough and then make them better so that if they move on, they move on for a substantial profit, then...
You're standing still.
Yeah, and if you're standing still in this league, you're going backwards. That's the reality. You know, there's no more of this... Well, we're stable. No, you're not stable. You're going to be unstable because you're going to go backwards because other clubs are going to come up and overtake you, a.k.a. Sunderland, newly promoted, odds on to go down, and now they've got a chance of making Europe if they beat Chelsea next weekend and other results go their way. And correct me if I'm wrong, but five years ago, Sunderland were an absolute basket case of a club. But whatever they've done, they've turned things around and they've got better self-belief internally. And whatever modus operandi they're using is working for them.
If you had a wish list, Paul, of what the Freakins would do before the close season and the transfer window opens, what would it be?
I think they need to be much closer to the club than they are.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to be really involved in the club, and they need to demonstrate their commitment to the club, and they need to explain what their expectations of the club are from their perspective, so we have a clear understanding of that. And then once they've demonstrated, or once they've said what their expectations of the club are, look at every single level from the CEO down. And I think the CEO is a good guy, and I think he could do much better than things than are currently he's allowed to do. I think they have to look at each position within the club: CEO, head of recruitment, head of academy, who the first team manager is, who's the tactical people behind all the various aspects of the game now, and ask themselves, are these people adequate for the expectations that we're setting for the club? And if they're not, make those changes, just in the same way that you might think, is Mikalenko an adequate left back?
Yep.
And if he's not, then he needs replacing. Every single position within the club,
right.
One needs to ask that question. But in order to ask that question, you need to know what your ambitions are. And I think the Freakins need to come out and they need to say, okay, we stabilised the club this year. We might have done a bit better than we did, but frankly, you know, that's beyond the expectations. Our expectations for the following year, next year, are this, and this is what we're doing about it. We've brought in this person, this person, this person, this person, manager, coach, recruitment, head of academy, whatever the positions are. And we brought those people in with the absolute desire, requirement, and ambition to produce those results.
Right.
And we see where we go from there.
They've got to set some hard and fast targets, really, haven't they?
Yeah.
You know.
But at every functional level of the club,
yeah.
You can't just go out and say, we finished 10th this year, you know, wherever we end up finishing 10th, 11th, whatever. And next year we're going to press for Europe. And that's inadequate.
Yeah, it's lightweight.
That doesn't meet the requirements of the modern game. They need to be really detailed. They need to be really focused. They need to be really granular in terms of their expectations and in terms of, for accountability purposes, in terms of their explanation to the fan base and to all of Everton's commercial partners, etc. This is what we want to do. This is what we expect. And these are the people that we think are going to do that.
Well, oh God in heaven. The next question's obvious, isn't it? What chance do you think there is of that happening, given their track record? Are we simply an investment? Do they actually know anything about football, these people?
I think they know a bit about football, but I don't think they know enough. And I think currently, as it stands, we're just an investment.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's fine if that's what we are. At least we know what we are and we move on from that. I think we can be far more than that now. And I think we could become an investment for them that actually, you know, becomes really, really meaningful. Because we've got the potential, we've got the fan base, we've got the, you know, in terms of the stadium, if not in terms of the infrastructure around it, we've got the facilities now. We are still one of England's biggest football clubs. And if non-Evertonians are listening to this, you might laugh at that. But the fact is that we are. We're still one of the most storied football clubs in the world. We come from a city that has an unmatched, relationship, desire for football. Everything is there. All of the core ingredients are there to make Everton Football Club so much bigger and greater than we are. You know, Everton. If they sold Everton tomorrow, they'd make a healthy return. They'd probably sell a club for somewhere between a billion and a billion and a half, which sounds like a lot of money, especially when they only invested 300 million. So they make a nice return on it. But actually, if we wanted to be Manchester United, Chelsea, Liverpool, and Arsenal, Real Madrid, Barcelona, whatever, then they wouldn't just like treble their investment or three or four times their investment. They could make their investment 10, 15 times more. Mm. And the question is, what is it that you want to do? And if you want to make your investment 10, 15 times what your investment was, or even more than that, then work out what it is that you need to do. And if you don't know what you need to do, listen to some of the people who actually do know what you need to do in order to do that. And I think that's where we're at. If you want to just own an asset that is now comfortably worth more than what you paid for it, then just carry on doing what you're doing, and we'll all moan and bitch about it and, you know, be disappointed about it at the end of every season. If you actually want to really make something that's really valuable, really exciting, and sort of something that people talk about in the years ahead, wow, if we can see it, and this is what they did to Everton or for Everton, then they have to change their approach.
I'm pretty sharpish.
Tonight,
yeah.
After that,
there's no time, right?
No.
I get all the love for Seamus. I'm at the least enthusiastic end of the Seamus fan club, if the truth be known, and that's not. Not me questioning his qualities as a human being, because I think he's a fabulous human being. But I don't think he's good enough or ambitious enough for somebody who's been at Everton for as long as he has been, and been captain of the club for as long as he has been. And I know they're harsh words, but that's what I think. But for him to go out on an occasion like today, it is frankly shameful. Not shameful for him in terms of his contribution, but in terms of what the club could do for him. Mm. He's given everything for the club, and let me make that absolutely clear.
100%.
He has put his body on the line, he's put his career on the line, he's put his future health on the line, year in, year out, for Everton Football Club, and nobody could ever take that away from him. And he went out on a whimper. He left the field in front of a 3/4 empty stadium.
Yeah,
he didn't deserve that.
No, he didn't.
As we got the substitution ready, I thought to myself, if I was Seamus Coleman, I'd turn to Dave and I'd go, "No, thanks."
Yeah, thanks, mate. Mm. I don't really want to do this. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a sad exit for him as a player with the club.
But it wasn't a reflection on him, was it?
No.
For all of the harsh words I just said about it.
Yeah. I get that. I get that, Paul. Like you said,
he put his absolute everything into his career at Everton Football Club, and he needs to be rewarded and thanked for that, and always remembered for that.
Mm.
His career isn't over. Maldini was still playing European Champions League football at 41 at fullback. And I don't think Coleman's career is over at all. I don't think he thinks it is either. And that's why he's hung up his boots at Everton, because he wants to play and he wants to keep his international shirt. And it's interesting that the Irish national manager thinks he's a better right back than who David Moyes thinks should be playing right back for Everton.
Yeah.
He could, the Irish national manager could have picked Jake O'Brien at right back, but what do you know, he didn't. He kept picking a right back.
Yeah, it's radical thinking, that, isn't it? Play a right back at right back. Bit like Seamus's debut when he was played at left back against Benfica. Pardon?
You there?
I was there, yeah. The 5-0 shellacking at Benfica.
And he was,
you know, I mean, that was his debut, against Angel Di Maria, who at the time was arguably one of the best right wingers in the world, in, or in Europe. And there was poor old Chambers making his debut on the wrong side of the pitch. I mean, I know we went there with injuries and everything because Tony Hibbert had to play at centre-half, and Tony Hibbert was hardly a physical colossus. But, I mean, what a baptism of fire he had. And then he goes out, you know, like you said, on the back of a performance like that today. Very, very sad for Seamus, really. Very sad.
Yeah.
But
he's got, you know, he'll never want for everybody's respect.
No. No, rightly so. I mean, and there's enough people elsewhere who, you know, who sing his praises. I mean, Ancelotti sang his praises. You know, Lampard does. I've heard Roy Keane speak very highly of him. And obviously he's fairly close to the Irish setup as well, or he was in the past. You know, he's got a lot of respect and a lot of admirers for what he's done. And when you think, you know, where he came from and what he cost us, he's got to be the all-time Premier League bargain buy. You know, short of coming on a free transfer, I mean, 60,000 is... But, you know, we have to take that out of the equation today. The rest of today was just bang. In fact, it wasn't even bang average. It was bang below average. Very, mm-hmm. Like I said, for me, the biggest disappointment in recent weeks has been the form of Willeman and Dyche. I'm very, very disappointed with what he served up today and how he played at Palace, for that matter. He's had two or three golden opportunities in each game. And to say he's muffed them is an understatement of biblical proportions. Just, we're in, the club's in limbo again. Moyes has made us stable. You know, which after the last 3 or 4 years of relegation fights and, you know, not knowing what on earth's going on behind the scenes with ownership until the Friedkins came in and all that, you know, you do have to give Moyes credit for what he did. But what's happened this season, for me, he's if you're doing a report card, you know, what's he going to get marks out of 10 for this season? At absolute best, it's a 6, and that's largely on the away form. You know, we out of the FA Cup in the first round, we got nowhere in the League Cup again. And we've had umpteen opportunities to break into the top end of the table, and every time we've muffed it. At the best, Moisey gets a 6 out of 10 for me, at best. And frankly, that's just not good enough. And I see lots of people and hear lots of people say, hang on a minute, you know, all the Moyes out brigade, you're not giving him enough credit for what he's done, what he inherited and what he's done. No, we are giving him credit for what he inherited and what he did last season. But he has had the opportunity this season to push the club further than we could end up 13th. If things go pear-shaped next weekend at Spurs, we could finish 13th. Now, is that a massive improvement on last year? I don't think it is in terms of league position. I am underwhelmed.
But Moisey could argue that, given the resources that was available to him, he did everything that could be reasonably expected of him. You know, recruitment in the summer was not great.
Right.
My argument against your defence of Moyes is, name me two occasions when the team played at 100% throttle, trying their hardest every minute, all 90 minutes.
Mm. Yeah.
Well,
but the counter argument to that is that maybe Moyes realised that this team was not as good as we all thought it might be.
And I think we have to realise, Paul, in the cold, hard light of day, that whilst the players might not be good enough, neither is the manager.
He's tactically
dated, because he gets out-coached week in, week out. You know,
I'll put my hand up to that. As one of Moyes' biggest advocates, I will put my hand up to that. There's no doubt about it. But this goes back to the point that, the league has moved on from where we are. And it shouldn't need three of us, sitting in a podcast, to recognise that. The owners should be recognising that. The board should be recognising that and making decisions that say, thank you, David. You're just like with Coleman, your reputation and everything else is sound with this football club, but we need better.
Yeah.
100%. Sadly.
If we're going to achieve what we set out for, if their ambitions are no greater than just staying as a Premier League football club, then tell us, and at least we know.
Yes, please. I would like to know that.
We're not mugs. People from the city of Liverpool are not mugs. We can deal with the truth, no matter how hard or difficult that truth might be. Just be honest with us. Give it to us as it is, as you see it. And then we can either agree or disagree, and hopefully agree, and hopefully we can all move together. But if it's not, then at least we know. For 40, 50 years, this football club has lived on a pretense, whereby the owners thought that we were actually better than we are, and used that reasoning as a shield, as a defence against their own inadequacies. There's no reason for the Freakins to do that.
Don't say again, Paul, you just went a bit watery then.
There's no reason for the Freakins to do that. They don't have any history in football. They don't have any association with the City of Liverpool or, even with the UK, if the truth be known. They did the job. They bought the club. They made the club more secure. If that's the limits of their expectations, thank you very much. Move on. Sell the club. Make a profit. Allow somebody else to come in that can actually make the club what we need it to be, and what it should be, and what it can be, and what, frankly, the fans and what this city deserves. And that's not an unreasonable ask.
Not at all.
It's a sensible, mature conversation between people who love the city, love the club, know football intimately, know Everton Football Club intimately, know when the wool is being pulled over our eyes. You can't go to hundreds of games over 30, 40 years of watching football and not know when the wool is being pulled over your eyes. You can't just come into the game just because you've got some money and because you've rescued a football club and tell us that you know more about the game than we do.
They're not even doing that, are they?
No, they're not saying anything. But just come out and just explain what their position is.
Absolutely, Paul.
It'd be nice if they actually came out and introduced themselves.
Frankly, nobody's asked who they are.
Well, nobody. It might be a starting point.
No. I don't care who he is. I don't care what he does. And this is me saying this, you know. It's a results business at the end of the day, and all we want are owners that are capable of producing results. And if they're not capable or have no desire to produce the results for whatever reason, because they don't have that ambition, they don't understand the game, they don't have enough money, or not prepared to commit enough money in order to produce the results, then let us know. We will form a judgment on that, and we will carry on supporting the club that we love, and we'll carry on celebrating our successes and, you know, suffering our disappointments. But that's what football's about. Just do it, please.
Perfect end to the podcast, Paul.
I don't know what else there is to say.
I don't think there is anything else to say. You know, that's the way this podcast sees this situation that we're in. And as I understand it, there is every possibility that the Friedkin Group will hear this or read it or be told about it by somebody. And that's what we'd like to hear, please. Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? Where are you? And what do you want? And come and share it with us, for God's sake.
Yeah. And be honest in telling us, have you got any serious idea of what we want?
Ooh, that's another 64,000 one there.
Well, first of all, they just have to tell us what they want.
Yeah.
And then we can all form a judgment about each other. They can decide whether what we want is reasonable or unreasonable. And we can decide what they want, what they're prepared to commit to, is reasonable or unreasonable. And we can all get along together or not, as the case may be. But just let's have an open, honest, decent, adult-type conversation with a group of fans. There's no more committed group of fans in the country than the Evertonians. There's not a city in the world that doesn't understand the realities of life, suffering and success like Liverpool do, like, you know, the city of Liverpool do. And just respect us, just acknowledge that.
Paul.
You know, treat us all as sensible, reasonable, rational adults who love our football club, love the game of football, act irrationally in the emotions of the game, but beyond that, actually understand life and understand football, but just we want that commonality between us, the true custodians of the club, and then as the financial owners of the club, just provide that, and then maybe we'll, you know, all be a bit happier at the end of the day.
Yep.
Right. There endeth the sermon.
There is something.
Is it evening tide? I think it is, isn't it? That's what they used to call it.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, listen, it's great to get back together, the band back together. It's been a few weeks, and it's not been quite as, well, a bit like Everton, really. We've not been as consistent as we should have been. And apologies for that to everybody who listens. But George and Andy, it's always a pleasure to speak to you both, and just wish we were speaking on better circumstances, but
you and me both.
At least we've had our say.
Let's have a now we'd like to have a listen, please.
All right. Well, let's see what happens between now and next week. Final game at Tottenham. I suppose the one consolation of the season is that we could still relegate Tottenham.
Well, currently West Ham are 2-0 down at Newcastle, so.
Oh.
Just approaching half time.
I might need to edit that bit, but never mind. Right.
No. Yeah, having banged on about how much we all know about football.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I exclude myself totally from that conversation, by the way, because I know nothing about football. But there we go. George and Andy, lovely to speak to you. Everybody, thank you for listening. We'll talk again next week, and let's see where it ends up. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, Paul.